but it's down to Cologne Ranger and Jeremy's Jet. Which of these will take the lion's share of $1 million? Jeremy's Jet on the inside, dead game, captures the matchup.
Moving pictures on the backfield is coming on. Moving pictures on the far outside, reaches up for Mark McDonald to win the Breeders' Crown Open Mare Pace. It is Moving Pictures with a 9-1 stutter and 151.
Lined up on the end of it, trying to reach Mystical Sunshine. And it's Peaceful Way with her brilliant winning way to capture the Armroad
The Grey Gladiator, the Gladiator Gris, la fait encore une fois une 74e victoire en carrière.
Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca. Hey everybody, this is Norm Borg from the home office at Rideau Carlton Raceway, and coming up next week, it's not just your average run-of-the-mill conference that the industry is holding. It's not one of those leave the wives at home and kind of a kickback kind of thing. The annual Standardbred Wagering Conference had its first meeting last year in Montreal, and it really did kick things off and jump started a lot of initiatives. They're going to do it again this year, next week in Windsor, and among the many moderators of the various sessions is a gentleman who's no stranger to horse racing in either breed, former sports analyst with City TV, now with 680 News in Toronto, editor of Down the Stretch newspaper. It's Peter Gross. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Norm.
Now, you've been watching this game for as long as I can remember, and both breeds. You're presenting to the Standardbred Wagering Conference. It's been deemed a bare-knuckles session. Tell us what it's going to be basically about.
My understanding is that we're going to have some executives, and with several days until the conference, I guess they're not completely sure who's going to be available, but executives from the racetrack, so right up at the very top, and that these people are going to sit down and the fans are going to be invited to come in and lob grenades at them and ask the difficult questions.
Now, what are the customers telling you? I mean, you're out on the street level. You've put out a number of publications about this game. You're in close touch with the fans. What are they telling you?
I wonder if the fans really feel embraced by the racetracks. My particular track is Woodbine, and I think that they've taken great strides in recent years to make the racetrack a warmer, friendlier, more responsive place. But I still think, in many ways, the horse player is left out in the dark on a number of issues.
Such as?
I think when the tracks advertise, what they miss is the most appealing thing about the races that to someone like myself who's God, I've been betting ever since the bookies used to use chalk.
Back when they wouldn't let you have a telephone in the racetrack because they were afraid you'd call your bookie. Yeah,
but that was back before you could have a cell phone.
Yeah.
What the best thing about the track? I mean, and I don't want to put down the fantastic athletes and the horses, but it's the parimutuel wagering.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways, parimutuel wagering is so much more democratic and mathematically fairer to a person betting than anything else. The lotteries push their product so powerfully and so persuasively and so seductively, and yet the chance for the horse player to make a pretty good buck on minimal risk or less risk than there is in the lotteries, for example, or in a casino. This has not been promoted. This has not been sold. This has not been explained. You'd have a difficult time getting hold of a handful of fans at the track who really comprehend what parimutuel wagering is all about.
And yeah.
I think a lot of fans think, we're betting against the track, and they didn't want that 10-1 shot to win, so they put the 3-5 shot up. That kind of...
It's amazing how little education has been bestowed upon the bettors. You're right, Peter. And you know something? I would think, and working in the marketing end of the business myself, it's going to become increasingly more difficult to try and get that message out because, let's not forget who's been effectively paying the freight, and that is OLG.
Well, I wonder if Woodbine is reluctant to say it's way better to bet the Daily Double than to bet 649, for example. It's way better to put $5 to place on a 6-to-1 shot than to buy a $5 scratch ticket. Are they reluctant to promote that aspect of their game because the Ontario Lottery Corporation is going to say, hey, what's going on here?
I think that's really the case.
My thinking is that it shouldn't bother them because, what's the Ontario Lottery going to do? Say, oh, we're going to pull our slots. we're going to shrug our shoulders at, millions and millions a year that come into our coffers from the slots at racetracks because you dare to say your type of betting is better?
I think the fear there, though, is that they'll take their ball and bat and go home and start their own slots parlors.
Well, you've got a captive audience at the track. You know, it's one-stop shopping. You can bet the horses, you can play the slots. But sorry state of affairs, if you ask me, because that's an aspect that has been completely underpromoted, that has not been adequately explained, and I'm not saying it's easily done, but you can do it in degrees.
What about the marketing of the game? I want to change gears for a minute here, because you're going to be talking to people who are going to say, well, okay, what about that 10% that they're going to use from purses to market the game better? Is that something you think is fundamental and that the business has to adapt?
Yep. There's an ad running now, and where I work at 680 News, we run the ad a lot, and I've seen the television version. The woman's got a strange, exotic voice and dramatic music, and to me, it's a huge waste of money. The thoroughbreds are back at Woodbine. It's very exciting. It's a lot of money to make a dramatic ad that doesn't give a person any reason to go to the track. It just reminds them, why not just have a person say, thoroughbreds are back at Woodbine. I think you've got to go the extra step and remind the person what it is they're going to see at the track, and it's spectacular horses and thrilling finishes and superb athletes and again, payoffs that you can't get anywhere else.
You know what the best ad for racing is right now on TV, I think?
What?
I think it's a Miller High Life ad, or High Life ad rather, where the Miller crew comes in at the racetrack and they shot this at Santa Anita, and they take their beer away from the front row guys and the hoity-toity sort of thoroughbred players, and they go and they distribute it to the Joes in the audience. I mean, it's that kind of reaching out to the regular guy who buys his $10 $6.49 every week and telling them, you know what, you're right, you got a shot here.
You know, I got a thing that I say constantly. If Vernon Wells was walking down the street, how many people would recognize him? If Chris Bosh was walking down the street, how many people would recognize him? If Randy Waples walked down the street, Jody Jameson, Steve Condren, Rick Zeron, I'll bet you he can go to his mall. And go from store to store to store, and no one recognizes him. And yet, he's one of the top 10 most successful Canadian athletes. Randy Waples. Well, I don't know. Hockey players make pretty good money, but these are athletes going out every single night, getting it done. I am sure that the racetracks aren't doing enough to promote the faces.
Amen.
And another pet peeve of mine, you take a guy like Randy Waples, who's a character and a charismatic guy. I mean, he's funny, he's bright, he's a very good-looking guy. He reminds me of Will Ferrell in many ways.
Yeah.
But he's been silly sometimes, so they punish him.
Yes.
For undesirable comments. And what they don't do is they don't let the public know, we've got a bit of a wise ass here.
Yeah.
We've got a guy who stands up in the bike, like he's riding a Roman chariot. We've got, and he's not really a Sean Avery, but he does mouth off from time to time. The difference between him and Sean Avery is that Randy Waples is, depending on the night, he's either the leading driver or the second leading driver at Woodbine.
Randy's a nice guy.
He's a terrific guy. But the average, if you put Randy Waples in a commercial with his face, some women might come to the track. On the flip side, the thoroughbreds have a woman named Chantel Sutherland, who is the best marketing tool ever.
Oh yeah,
because she's I'm hoping that anyone listening to this runs out and gets the next issue of Down the Stretch. We have the greatest shot of her, and I took the picture. It's like I didn't have to tell her what to do. She knows how to. she knows how to kiss the camera.
Funny Chantel Sutherland story, Peter. It's at last year's Breeders' Cup. One of the commentators was saying, gosh, you know, Chantel Sutherland must be the smartest jockey here at Santa Anita because all the trainers want to talk to her.
Well, it doesn't help to be stunning, but I did a story 4 or 5 years ago about lady jockeys, and I found out there were 6,200 races. Let's say it was 2003. I'm not sure of the year. 2002, 2003, they ran 6,200 races at Santa Anita and Hollywood, and one woman jockey won. Of all the races, only one time did a woman jockey win. Chantel goes down. She wins 10% of her races.
Yeah.
When she was in New York, she won 10% of her races. So she's not only gorgeous, she's a terrific jockey.
She gets it done.
People betting her at Woodbine last summer saw her do fantastic things on the grass. She's a really skilled grass jockey, but without the benefit of having the top stables behind her, because she's, you know, she's in, out, she goes to New York, she goes to California, she can get on just about any horse and win a race. And she may, in fact, you know, Patrick Husbands notwithstanding, she might be the best jockey in Canada right now. Woodbine's got this incredibly, I mean, like, over-the-top, stunning, stunning woman. She's got this straight, she's pretty good-looking in person, but she takes an amazing picture. And, you know, she wins races. She's getting very, very media-wise. Wants to promote herself.
Yeah, and she's on a reality show now.
Yeah, and she—I mean, they certainly saw down in California, in Hollywood, that we got to put this woman in. I mean, it's a great story. Her and Mike Smith. You know, the girlfriend riding against the boyfriend, and they amped up the emotional conflict about Chantel wanting to ride in Canada. But that's a profoundly marketable kind of thing.
And we're missing the boat. We are definitely missing the boat.
Chantel Sutherland as visually appealing and as recognizable as Chris Bosch, Andrea Bargnani, Matt Sundin, Wendell Clark. These are heroes. This woman's from Brampton, for God's sake.
There you go.
It's not like she's dropped in, you know, from Kentucky.
And what about a Rick Zeron? You're right, or a Randy Waples. And we got some young kids coming up that are just dynamite. The McNevins, the Scott Coulters, Jason Brewers, you know, people like that.
You look at what these people are racing for, like the harness races. The purses are as high, if not higher, than every track in North America. And there's these 18-year-old kids. Well, I think McNair made his horses cashed $1 million last year.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he make? Did he make 75, 80,000? An 18-year-old kid making...
Beautiful.
Just some great stories there. And instead of... I intend to talk to the people at Woodbine and say, how much did you spend on this ad that accomplishes nothing? And they'll probably smack me around. But make an ad that says, come see Rick Zeron.
Yeah.
Come see the, you know... Jody Jameson is the leading driver at Georgian Downs. He's the leading driver at Woodbine, and he's going to be the leading driver soon at Flamborough because he's hitting 5 races a night.
I just saw him win one today. Yeah, that's amazing.
Been the leading driver at 3 different tracks.
Yeah, where's the story on that?
And his universal driving rating, and I realize no human being could possibly understand how that's calculated, but that notwithstanding, is so much higher than everybody else. How can that be? He just goes to the track and gets on the horses he's assigned. So he must be a sensational driver.
Well, he's got to be.
We've written about this a number of times in Down the Stretch, and I've been ordered by the people I work with to cease and desist because I've been turning it into the Jody Jameson Love Fest.
But I'll tell you what, you provide us with great stories, both in Down the Stretch. It's now in its second edition, and the next one comes out when?
April 24th. We're at the Woodbine. We're at Mohawk. We're up to 14-15 Champions Lounge,
good.
And we're online at downthestretchnewspaper.com.
And you're going to be speaking at the Standardbred Wagering Conference in Windsor on the 28th.
It's not a race. I mean, is there an off-track theater anywhere?
Yeah, well, we're going to be going down to Windsor for the night, Pete. So you're okay. You and I are okay.
If I'm distracted.
Yeah. It's at night too.
I don't do good work when I got things to bet on. I'm really looking forward to this, and I was delighted that I was asked.
Always a pleasure. You make this really easy for me, Peter Gross of 680 News, one of the moderators at the upcoming Standardbred Wagering Conference in Windsor. Thanks so much for this.
Thank you, God. Norm, look forward to meeting you in Windsor.
Likewise. Peter Gross. And we go from that end of the spectrum to some of the more political issues that are going to be discussed at the wagering conference. We'll do that with the Dean. Dean Hoffman is next on Trot Radio on Standardbred Canada. Welcome back to Trot Radio as we preview next week's Standardbred Wagering Conference in Windsor, Ontario. And one of the moderators at the conference is my next guest on the other end of my line. Dean Hoffman comes by the name Dean honestly in racing circles, a former editor of Hoofbeats magazine, president of Hoffman Communications, does a lot of work as a racing analyst and journalist around the world, and we've got him here on Trot Radio. Welcome, Dean Hoffman.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the wagering conference very much.
Well, you're going to be tackling a rather interesting subject, and it's something that we all know in this business has to be done. We know we need to market our product more aggressively. We've got to find that lost generation of fans. How we're going to do it, though, may be problematic to some of the participants. Explain to the uninitiated what it is you're going to be tackling.
Well, we're going to be talking about a model that would set aside 10% of track funds, purses, I suppose, or it can be done in any number of ways. It doesn't have to be limited to 10% for promotion and marketing. And I think the situation that many tracks find themselves in today is that, particularly if they've had the largesse of slots revenue, they find themselves with very substantial purses. But when you look in the grandstand, there's 37 people watching the races and 3,000 playing the slots, and that's a model that obviously just can't continue. I mean, we've got to learn to stand on our own 2 feet at some time.
That's exactly the point that a lot of people have been trying to make. I mean, we don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg, i.e. slots, but at some point we've got to cut the tether.
Well, speaking of tether, the analogy that I've used, and there are many analogies, is that if a man is drowning, as racing is drowning in many areas, and you throw him a rope, he doesn't say, well, I didn't want a yellow rope, I wanted a blue rope. No, what the person does who's drowning is you grab the rope and hold on and hope to be pulled to safety. And racetracks are basically drowning, and slots are the rope that's going to pull them to safety. But what, in fact, the person who's drowning learns to need to do is learn how to swim. And that's what racing needs to do. We need to learn how to swim. We need to have to make it on our own without a lifeline.
You're absolutely right. Now, there is strength in numbers. There's been a lot of talk about the possibility of a racing czar, as it were, a commissioner, a league of racing. That, to me, seems like a sensible way to execute some of the ideas that have come forth already from the first Standardbred Wagering Conference. However, the possibility of that happening, just because of the lack of cooperation, to me seems very remote.
Well, I think that the term czar has often been bannered around in terms of regulation because through the United States and even into the Canadian provinces, you have different regulations and different jurisdictions, and none of the state or perhaps provincial jurisdictions are willing to give up their sovereignty. And so the idea of a czar is maybe a little bit of a pipe dream with respect to regulation, because where is that person going to get his power if the states or the provinces won't give it up?
What about a commissioner, then, that can run racing as a league, and we'd have a uniform marketing plan and could participate that way?
Well, I think that, you know, the idea of a czar or a commissioner with respect to promotion is a wonderful idea and should be pursued, and in fact actually has been done to varying degrees of success in the past. There was a man named Bill Rosenberg who 25 years ago formed something called North American Harness Racing Marketing Alliance. And Mr. Rosenberg had founded Dunkin' Donuts, very successful businessman, loved harness racing. And what he recognized back in the 1980s is that the sport needed to market itself much better. And that does not involve the regulation, the rulemaking. That's probably going to be difficult to wrest that away from the state racing commissions. But with respect to marketing and promotion, that can, in fact, be done by the major organizations, Standardbred Canada, USTA, along with tracks, and because it's not a rulemaking function. And so there is precedent for this. It's just never been maybe funded adequately, because money's always a problem. That gets back to our topic of maybe setting aside some of the purse money for marketing, because the idea of having these large purses with no public support is basically a short-term feast and that will lead to a long-term famine.
It's corporate welfare of a sort.
Absolutely, and what we need is workfare. We need mm-hmm. When a person's on welfare and you just keep giving them money year after year, that will continue forever. But if that person is then trained and given a trade or a profession, then they're able to support themselves and learn. And I think that's what racing needs to do, is we need to take advantage of the windfall of slots revenues or any type of revenues and allocate some of that for promotion and marketing, because, there's no guarantee that the legislators, the parliament members in Canada, or even the racino operators are going to continue to fund racing the way it has. So there's going to come a day when the money may not be there.
We've known for years what the problem is and perhaps how to fix it. It's certainly my hope that through conferences like the one going on next week in Windsor, these sorts of changes might be affected. Dean Hoffman, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, and I really look forward to the conference in Windsor. The program looks very exciting, and I'm just privileged to be part of it.
Well, we look forward to hearing from you there.
Thank you.
Dean Hoffman of Standardbred Canada's Wagering Conference, among the many other hats he wears, with us on Trot Radio, which is wrapping up for this edition. Trot Radio is a presentation of Standardbred Canada, technical producer Chris Knowles, and put together by Boar Communications. Bye-bye.